66. Bulk lift. Chivette climbs through the hatch in the roof of Skinner's room to find Rydell kneeling there in his Lucky Dragon security bib, but the critical factor here is the man from the bar, the one who shot Carson, who's got a gun pressed into Rydell's ear and is watching her and smiling. He's not much older than she is, she thinks, with his black buzz cut and his black leather coat, his scarf wrapped just so, casual, but you know he takes time with it, and she wonders how it is people get this way, that they'll stick a gun in someone's ear, and you know they'll use it. And why does it seem that Rydell finds people like that? Or do they find him? And behind him, she can see a plume of water arcing higher than the bridge, and knows that that must be from a fireboat, because she's seen one used when a pier on the Embarcadero burned. God, it's strange up here now, with the night sky all smoke, the flames, lights of the city swimming and dimmed as the smoke rolls. Little glowing red worms are falling, winking out all around her, and the smell of burning. She knows she doesn't want Rydell hurt, but she isn't afraid. She just isn't now. She doesn't know why. Something on the roof beside her, and she sees that it's a glider, up on its own little frame, staked to the asphalt-coated wooden roof with bright, sharp spikes, and other things piled beside it, black nylon bags, what she takes to be bedding. Like someone's ready to camp here if they need to, and she understands the buzz-cut boy wanted to be covered if he had to stay to hide. And it comes to her that probably he's responsible for the burning of the bridge, and how many dead already, and he's just smiling there like he's glad to see her, his gun in Rydell's ear. Rydell looks sad, so sad now. "You killed Carson," she heard herself say.
"Who?"
"Carson, in the bar."
"He was doing a pretty good job putting your lights out."
"He was an asshole," she said, "but you didn't have to kill him."
"Fortunately," he said, "it isn't about who's an asshole. If it were, our work would never be done."
"Can you fly this?" pointing at the glider.
"Absolutely." "I'm going to take this gun out of your ear now," he said to Rydell.
He did.
She saw Rydell's eyes move. He was looking at her.
The boy with the buzz cut hit him in the head with the gun. Rydell toppled over, lay there like a big broken doll.
One of the glowing red worms fell on his stupid pink bib, burned a black mark. "I'm going to leave you here," he said. He pointed the gun at one of Rydell's legs. "Kneecap," he said.
"Don't," she said.
He smiled. "Lay down over there, by the edge, on your stomach." The gun never moved. She did as she was told. "Put your hands behind your head."
She did.
"Stay that way." She could watch him out of the corner of her eye, moving toward the glider. The black fabric of its simple triangular wing was catching a breeze now, thrumming with it. She saw him duck under the kite-like wing and come up within the carbon fiber framework extending beneath it. There was a control bar there. She'd seen people fly these on Real One. He still had the gun in his hand, but it wasn't pointed at Rydell. She could smell the asphalt caked on the roof. She remembered spreading it with Skinner on a hot, windless day, how they heated the hard bucket of tar with a propane ring. The world Skinner had helped build was burning now, and she and Rydell might burn now with it, but the boy with the buzz cut was ready to fly.
"Can you make it to the Embarcadero with that?"
"Easily," he said. She saw him shove the gun into the pocket of his black coat and grip the bar with both hands, lifting the glider. The breeze caught at it. He walked into the wind, reminding her somehow of a crow walking, one of those big ravens she'd grown up seeing in Oregon. He was within a few feet of the edge now, the side of Skinner's room that faced China Creek.
"You and your friend here caused me a great deal of trouble," he said. "But you're either going to burn to death or asphyxiate now, so I suppose we're even."
He looked out, stepped forward. And Chivette, without having made any conscious decision at all, found herself on her feet, moving, drawing the knife Skinner had left for her, and ripping it down as he stepped from the edge through the black fabric, a 3-foot slash, from near the center and straight out through the trailing edge. He never made a sound then, as he went fluttering down, faster, spinning like a leaf, until he struck something and was gone. She realized that she was standing at the very edge, her toes out over empty air, and she took a step back. She looked at the knife in her hand, at the pattern locked there by the beaten links of motorcycle chain. Then she tossed it over, turned, and went to kneel beside Rydell. His head was bleeding from somewhere above the hairline. His eyes were open, but he seemed to be having trouble focusing. "Where is he?" Rydell asked. "Don't move your head," she said. "He's gone." The breeze shifted, bringing them smoke so thick the city vanished. They both started to cough. "What's that sound?" Rydell managed, trying to crane his neck around. She thought it must be the sound of the fire. But it resolved into a steady drumming, and she looked out to see, just level with her, it seemed, the block-wide, impossible brow of a greasy gray bulk lifter, Omaha Transfer, painted across it in letters 30 feet high. "Jesus Christ," she said, as the thing was upon them, its smooth, impossibly vast girth so close she might touch it. And then it jettisoned its cargo, close to 2 million gallons of pure glacial water, destined for the town south of Los Angeles. And she could only cling to Rydell and keep her mouth shut against the weight and the surge of it. And then she was somewhere else, and drifting. And it seemed so long, so long, since she'd slept.